On this episode of Marketing Mavericks, we talk about podcasting. How do you create good content? How do you get subscribers? And what does it mean to focus on the sizzle, not the steak? Coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Marketing Mavericks is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Marketing Mavericks, episode 53, recorded Thursday, April 30th, 2015. The podcast sizzle. Welcome to Marketing Mavericks, where we talk about everything at the intersection of marketing and technology. I'm your host, Tanya Hall, and we're going to dig into the intersection today of marketing and technology where it meets podcasting. What? That's right, podcasting. How you actually get started in the podcasting world, and what a better place to hear about it than on the Twit Network, who, with Leo Laporte's pioneered network in the podcasting space. And, you know, you can certainly talk to Lisa, you know, I would say Kinsel, but it's actually Laporte now, about, you know, how to monetize a huge network. But our fans are interested in maybe how you just get started. How do you actually get started in the podcasting space? How do you market and monetize it? Today we have me as your host. We've got some excellent guests. We also have our technical director, Anthony Nielsen.
Hey, how's it going?
You know, again, no puppies, no kittens. What's going on?
And I actually do have kittens. I have three foster kittens. I should have shown you earlier, but they're cute.
Oh, do you have them pulled up?
No, I don't.
Seriously? You can't even get me my kitten fix?
Maybe at the end of the show.
All right. Okay. I'll settle for that. And our guests today are experts in the podcasting space. In fact, ironically, I invited them all separately to be on the show today. And of course, they already knew each other, all of them. In fact, they kind of had some fun with that before the show. Our first guest, Lynette Young, who is the director of marketing at MNIG. Is that right?
Mingle.
Yeah,
we killed the last vowel, you know, a la Flickr.
And you're at Lynette Radio on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Welcome back. You've been on the show before. I'm so happy to have you.
I have. Always a pleasure.
And we have our second guest, Cliff Ravenscraft, who is at GSPN. He is the podcast answer man. Welcome to the show for the first time, Cliff.
Hey, thanks, Tanya. I'm so glad to be here.
And finally, we've got Paul Colligan, who is the podcast report and at Colligan on Twitter. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you. Being on the Twit Network is one of my bucket lists, so I can pretty much die after this. So.
Oh, well, that's unfortunate or fortunate. I'm not really sure how to answer that.
Yes.
Well, you're all invited because you've all been experts. I've been friends with you, Lynette, for a long time and friends on social media. And I just am getting to know you, Cliff and Paul, but you're experts in the space of helping people understand how to actually get started. And I want to each one of you kind of tell a little bit about like how you got started to kind of give people some context. Lynette, you've been doing this for how many years?
Since 2004. How many years is that? Let's do math today. 11?
No math. Yeah.
No math. 11 years.
And I know, Cliff, you got started because it was just a passion of yours. You didn't even plan for it to be. It was a hobby, I think, right? It wasn't even going to be a business.
Yeah, I started as a hobby in December of 2010 and reached thousands of people. And all of a sudden, people started to beg me to teach them how to podcast, which I was doing for free for 2 years. And after 2 years of doing consulting and coaching, I decided to go into it full time in January of 2008. And I've been doing podcast coaching and consulting full time since then as my career.
And how about you, Paul? What actually pulled you into this wonderful space of podcasting?
To be honest, I was a fan of digital audio way back to the year 2000. I had an old Microsoft Pocket PC. I had one of the first Audible accounts. And one of my goals was I wanted to be Audible. I wanted to take some of my training programs and make them available on all these portable devices that we have. Not necessarily this one, obviously, at that time. So wasn't able to get onto Audible. The entry fee was a little bit heavy in the year 2000. But when podcasting popped up, I said, this is it. I can do this. I can start being on every device. And the cool thing was I had been living for 5 years understanding the power of listening to the content when and where and how I wanted. So podcasting was just a natural fit. Haven't looked back.
a natural fit and you haven't looked back. And Lynette, I didn't actually ask. I asked you how long you've been doing, but what was your entry? Like, what, did you start with a podcast or did you just?
Yeah, actually, I started with like an audio blog type. It was a girlfriend of mine. I had just come out of a failed retail store. So my ego was a little bruised. So welcome to the internet, right? And it was just basically an audio, more like a journal, kind of like in lines of what blogging started out with way back in the day. And then I wound up launching a show called Scrapcast, and it was audio only, and to do paper art show in audio only was very odd, but we made it work. And I wound up getting a 6-figure sponsorship for that, actually, because I went into developing the podcast with the notion of it being a business entity. So that worked out really well for me, and I was able to catapult the rest of my businesses that way.
Catapult. Smart. What a great word. Catapult. We should be catapulting. Well, in case you're curious, I actually didn't get into podcasting until I actually joined Twit. I was on regular terrestrial radio. I started at Citadel Broadcasting because, like you, Clev, I was just really passionate and wanted to tell everybody how the internet was changing everything. This was 2006. By the time I got on air, I think it was 2008. And I was on this really fortunately the GM at the station where I was launched gave me time and space at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday.
Oh,
on a sports channel, nonetheless, to talk about technology.
Yeah,
but people were excited about it, and it started to grow. And I was soon to be all over Colorado, and ended up being on Cumulus and. I interviewed Leo, actually. For my birthdays, I would always invite somebody really, really special. I thought special. And of course, he is Leo Laporte. And I interviewed him. And that was kind of my initial introduction to getting to know Leo and the Twit Networks. And here I am today.
It's history.
It's history. So that said, probably one of the most popular questions that I get on marketing is actually how do you market a podcast, which of course makes sense. We're a podcasting news network. And so that would be a legitimate question. And I think, you know, there's a very big difference in how you market other types of media versus maybe how you would market a podcast, literally how do you get started. And I know you guys train and coach on this and you've experienced it yourself. You know, Cliff, I'll go back to you because I know that that ended up turning into a business for you. What is probably the first question that people get asked ask you when they're just looking to get started and they want to start a podcast?
Well, when they first want to start a podcast, the typical things that they ask is what equipment do I need and how do I get into iTunes? Do I have to upload every episode I record into iTunes and stuff like that? But the question that I'm most asked from people who have created that podcast is how do I gain an audience? And more specifically, what happens is I get people who say, you know, I've been podcasting for 6 months and so far I only have like 300 subscribers or I only have 500 subscribers. How do I get that next 1,000? How do I get to 10,000? How do I get to 100,000?
So how do you do it? And is it, you know, where you should focus? Should you focus on the actual number of people? I mean, that's, I think, probably where if you plan to monetize, that's what advertisers are going to look at, right?
Well, that's one of the things that I love talking about. It's one of the big heart point issues for me personally. So when somebody comes to me and says, you know, I only have 300 subscribers, I only have 500, I can tell right away that that person's not a public speaker. Because if they had ever been in a room of 300 or 500 people and they were speaking to them, they would realize what an awesome privilege it is that those people intentionally came to listen to their message every single week for the last 6 months. And that's a very large crowd of people. So I definitely am all about growing our audience and getting that next 1,000 and reaching 10,000 people and however many that is possible for you to reach. But one of the things that I like to do is encourage people to say, you know, how about instead of focusing on where our next 500 subscribers is going to come from, and instead let's take some time to get to know personally and build a relationship with some of the most loyal and devoted listeners in our audience. And so I would recommend that, you know, if you have 500 subscribers, make it a goal to get to know the first name, last name, and email address and 3 personal details about at least 50 people in your audience. And make it a goal to really know about those people, find out how you can serve them, and build a deep relationship with them. Because at the end of the day, when it comes to marketing my podcast, I could either spend all day today trying to get the word out about my podcast so people understand that it's available, what it is, and why they should listen, Or at the end of the day, I could have 50 people or 100 people who love me, my content, and my message so much and feel so compelled because of the relationship that I have with them that I've got 50 or 100 people in my audience that are out there doing that marketing of my show.
How do you get that first 50, though, or that first 100? I mean, is it just, you know, reaching out to your network? Is it all just, you know, hey, buddy, I've got this new podcast I'd really like for you to download or subscribe to it. I mean, how do you literally get it off the ground for the very first week or month or so?
Well, just putting yourself into iTunes is going to be, I mean, there is a little bit to say, build it and they will come. Because once you put yourself into iTunes, if you have a particular niche or topic that is of interest to a lot of people, there are going to be some people who will naturally find it. Depending on what your topic is, will depend on how many people naturally find it just by being in the store. For example, when I started about the TV show Lost back in December of 2005, I had more than 17,000 subscribers after my third episode, but everybody was looking for the TV show Lost in iTunes, and podcast about Lost showed up right below the TV episodes. So that's how I picked up a ton of new subscribers. But all of us who have these passions that we might be interested in podcasting about, chances are we're already naturally connecting and building a network of other people who share those passions, which is much easier today on social media with tools like Twitter and Facebook and all these other tools where we gather around shared passions. And basically, once you finally push your first episode or publish your first episode out online, sharing it within that close network of friends is the first place to turn to get your first subscribers.
Lynette, how important is it to use social media, to use Facebook, to use Twitter, or you know, should you pay for advertising? Do you just reach out to your network of friends? How do you come up with a marketing strategy for social media?
You know, it's funny because I was just thinking between Paul Cliff and I, you know, we did podcasting before Facebook. So, you know, it was harder back then, right?
Absolutely.
We walked uphill both ways.
We used MySpace and Frapper Maps.
Friendster. Wait, no, let's not go back there. But a lot of it now is much easier. And I have to say, looking at the three of us that are on your show today, I know all of my background and a good maybe scratch the surface of these two gentlemen. And we all have varying backgrounds on this. And a lot of the work that I've done in the past probably 8 years professional with podcasting has always been behind the scenes. Now, people need help, like how do you actually physically make a podcast and all the technical aspects. I always throw them over to Cliff, to be quite honest with you. But I work a lot with companies, franchises, financial firms, content that may, you know, otherwise be considered boring. And how do they get this out there? A lot of it nowadays is marketing via their email list that they already have, marketing to very highly segmented audiences on Facebook or LinkedIn, depending on the, you know, what their podcast niche is about and things like that, or targeting via on their own website. I've seen a couple clients of mine have, like, say, for example, financial podcasts where they think it's for one audience. So they try to just keep it away from everybody else. And they don't realize that by going a little wider with who you expose the shows to, you can actually get more listeners that you wouldn't necessarily consider your demographic. But advertising, I hate to say it, but once you get going kind of organically, if you need bumps, it's usually due to advertising and spending money wisely to the right audiences. It's no different than any other piece of content online, honestly. So that's kind of the way that I work it. But a lot of the content that goes into the shows itself, calls to action, requests for reviews in iTunes and things like that, that goes a long way. And a lot of times people that are starting out, especially when they're I won't say hobbyist, but someone that's doing it for passion and for business versus an established big business that's using this as a media outlet for themselves, they tend to forget about those other steps about asking for reviews, highlighting user comments in their own shows and things like that to kind of get the engagement and the audience back and forth, because they're not used to communicating. Like Cliff was saying, like learn their names, learn something about them. Big companies aren't used to doing that. So when you kind of want them to do that, they get a little shocked, but usually it's just that little tiny bit over that you can push them that starts the word of mouth amongst their friends as well too, which of course helps every little bit. But I'd have to say advertising right now is probably the biggest way that I get my own clients a little bit more exposure.
There's so many different places that you can put your podcasts can be, you know, downloaded. It was iTunes. We've mentioned there's also YouTube, obviously two very, very popular. There's so many other places and many more are getting into that space of hosting your podcast for you and helping you with distribution. How important is picking the right distribution channel? Is it the more the merrier? Are there specific distribution channels that are more profitable? I mean, you know, you also have the issue if you have sponsors. You know, how do you position that on YouTube? There's a lot that goes into distribution, understanding the connection of advertising and distribution. What would you say to that, Lynette?
So here's the thing. It's funny because we were chatting before the show. I'm actually, after all these years of staying behind the scenes, launching a podcast network of my own called The Fierce Network with a partner of mine, Danielle Smith. And our target audience are Gen X women, right? And Gen X women don't tend to go to YouTube. It's audio and video podcasts. But Gen X women, for example, I know from experience, don't tend to gravitate towards YouTube for anything other than instructional or entertainment, right? They're not going to go to that platform to subscribe to a video network. There are other ways that they go about it. iTunes is usually it. So I'll take a look at the demographics of who your target audience is, who you want to listen to there. And if YouTube doesn't make sense, well, it's a free distribution model of hosting video, but sometimes places like Vimeo or, video podcasts through iTunes might be a better choice. So I kind of look at it that way. I look at where's my audience live and how can I get to them rather than what free network can I get to host my files. So that's kind of how I approach it.
What would you say about that,
Paul? Can I jump in there?
Yeah, jump in. Please do.
Paul. One of the beautiful things about the internet. Hey, it's Lynette. One of the beautiful things about the internet is, especially as independent content producers, is we don't have to pick a side. You know, Disney, ABC, they have to be at ABC.com and they have to do the Disney stuff. We don't. We can be on YouTube. We can be on Vimeo. We can be on Daily Motion. Don't tell my mom, but I've got shows on stupidvideos.com. You know, the beautiful thing is we take our content, we put it wherever the heck we want to put it and gain the audience that way. You know, Lynette spoke to, maybe you do a video podcast, maybe you do YouTube. I actually did a test. This is really interesting. I did a 12-part video series about marketing on YouTube. I took the same exact videos, same exact description, same exact everything, put one up as an iTunes podcast, put one up as a YouTube podcast. An iTunes podcast and a YouTube show. Did no marketing of either of them. Now, it was about YouTube, so YouTube gets a slightly unfair advantage. Guess which one got more downloads 5-1?
Well, I think you just gave us the answer.
Yeah, iTunes. iTunes gave us, no, we got 5-1 downloads from iTunes. Now, some strategists would say, well, then pull out of YouTube. No, because I also got the one at YouTube. So for every 5 I got at iTunes, I got one at YouTube, getting a couple at Daily Motion, getting a couple at Vimeo. The traffic for stupid videos really isn't as much as it used to be anymore, so I'm not getting as much there. But the fact of the matter is I could be anywhere I want to be. You know, in the podcasting world, we've got Stitcher, we've got SoundCloud, we've got TuneIn, we've got CBS, we've got all these guys. Great. Put your stuff everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, now, if you're tracking with advertisers and you have some specific requirements and you have some logistical legal issues, you know, definitely pay attention to the people paying your bills. But if you're doing it smartly, go everywhere. There's no place not to be. I know some disagree with me on that one, but gosh darn it, if you got good content, you're passionate about it, you know, why not go everywhere you possibly can go?
I have a caveat I'd like to add to that. I agree with the be everywhere content, and it certainly makes sense to also release it either as a YouTube channel or a series with a playlist in your existing YouTube channel if you have a video podcast. But there are a lot of folks out there over the years that have an audio podcast, and what they will do is they'll take their audio podcast and put it into some software and put just a standard splash screen that stays the same, or maybe they'll change the screen every few moments depending on what topic's being discussed. And they put that out on YouTube as a 1-hour video podcast or video episode in YouTube. And my experience is that does very little for anyone. And it's really not actually the content that the YouTube audience is looking for the most part. So what I recommend for an audio podcaster who's creating content that's in audio form for 30 minutes to an hour on a weekly basis, to actually go ahead and create yourself a YouTube channel that will reach your target audience. But take and maybe after you finish recording your podcast, get in front of your camera and give a 3-minute or less overview of the content that you just put in podcast form and say, hey, in the comments section or in the information section below, click on the link to listen to that full interview now.
Yeah. And I'm going to one-up Cliff here because Cliff's dead on. But really, Cliff gave a very, very specific example of the way people make themselves look ridiculous. Here's the deal. don't do something that makes you look ridiculous, okay? Doing an audio podcast with just the cover of your screen gets people going, is it going to change? Is it going to change? Is it going to change? They eventually get mad after a few minutes, and they give you a thumbs down. Put your content everywhere that makes you look good. Don't put your content any place that makes you look bad. Mm-hmm. You know, so the same thing Cliff said about YouTube is true for Vimeo, is true for Dailymotion, is true for stupid videos. You know, there was some big news about SoundCloud yesterday that came out, and it killed me because somebody was commenting in the comments, well, why doesn't SoundCloud do video? Okay, name is SoundCloud. That's why. Okay, same reason. You know, and I commented, and those guys at YouTube still haven't done the audio only thing. You know, definitely know your audience. Definitely be intelligent. Don't spray and pray, but intelligently shoot your stuff out to anything that makes sense.
I think if you look at it even from a marketing standpoint, if you're marketing a product, it's not necessarily meant for everyone on every platform, right? I mean, we are definitely seeing a growth in podcasts to the more millennials. They're younger. The demographics, I want to say, the Edison research, you know, had a report out. What's that?
Good old Tom.
Tom Webster. I know. I was following his Facebook this morning, and we were chatting, and 17% of it's 46 million people. That's, you know, a third of Americans are actually listening to more podcasts. And the numbers are growing pretty significantly. I think this is really the year that people are creating more content and getting people excited about it and potentially moving away. I've been a cord cutter myself for a long time, moving away from traditional content into more of the podcasting space. But how do you know who your demographic is? I mean, should you already know that just because of the content you're creating? I mean, not everybody.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you totally should. People do this. You know, the thing is, you know, Cliff hinted the if they build it, they will come thing. Yeah, about a dozen will come. But you're going to get bored really, really quickly when the dozen show up. And what happens is if you don't know who you're creating your show for, stop. Figure out who you're creating your show for. You know, if it's just an experiment where you want to like flip on the microphone and see what happens and you just want to ramble for a little while, that's great. But be aware that you rambling for a little while you figure out what you are and who you are isn't really that compelling audio or video. You know, and what you want to do is you just want to figure out where people are. But the first question you asked, and this is really, really important, you know, how do you market a podcast? There's an old marketing, you know, catchphrase that went on for a long time, sell the sizzle, not the steak. This is huge in podcasting. If you take the world of podcasting and the numbers go up, and Tom's been showing us this, this is the segment that knows what podcasting is. This is the segment that knows what content is. If you say, I've got content about X, and it's intriguing to people who are intrigued about X, they might just make you their first podcast ever. If you say, I have a podcast about X, this is the only group that cares. You know, two types of people in the world, those who know what a podcast is, those who don't. Those who know what a podcast is don't care whether or not you're a podcast if you really help them with the content. Those who don't know what a podcast is don't know if they can listen to you. My own mom, to this day, I've been doing this for 10 years. If you ask her, you ever listen to your son's show, she'll look you dead in the eye with all the passion that mom says, and she'll go, I don't have an iPod, you know, because she thinks that she
I'm calling your mom.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I love this woman, but, you know, come on, mom. You know, but the fact of the matter is, a little while ago, I got my show on iHeartRadio.
Nice.
It's the same podcast I do everywhere else. But because I got my show on iHeartRadio, mom now on her little Kindle, you know, her Kindle Fire that I got her for her birthday, she goes, look, my son's on iHeartRadio. I've been there for years. But, you know, but it's all about meeting people where they are. So just stop selling podcasting. Start selling content. If you look at internet, it started with, have you heard of the internet? Then it was, do you know what email it is? Then, do you have an email? And then, what is your email? You know, now it's, are you checking your email anymore? But, you know, podcasts, have you ever heard of podcasting? You know, it's going to go very swiftly to this is a podcast. You know, my 15-year-old, podcasting is just one of the viable options out there. There's no why is it different than this? Why is it better than that? It's just one of the options. And that's where we're all going. And we're going there quickly. So stop selling the podcast. Start selling the content. And you'll do a lot better.
It's funny because when I first got started, I had zero idea. I didn't even know I was supposed to show up with a headset. Like, I just showed up at the radio station and borrowed somebody's headset to get logged in. I was just excited. I had zero broadcasting experience. But one of the best pieces of advice I was given was to literally come up with the profile of the person that I was talking to. Is it male or female? How old is he or she? What do they look like? Where do they shop? What do they eat? Like, really identify who this person is. And then every single show, talk to that person. And I think that's a pretty simple way. What do you think? What do you guys think about that?
That's what Cliff spoke to. That's what Cliff said about the first 50 people. That's exactly what he said.
Listen to Cliff.
Listen to Cliff.
We're trying. Yeah,
that's pretty much what we say. Listen to Cliff. I'd like to add, though, that a lot of times we're talking about, you know, what we're doing in the podcast. But I also think about it as a marketing technologist and a content marketer of what do you want out of that podcast? Because, you know, even like Cliff alluded to before, everybody chases the numbers, right? And it's one thing if you're going after advertising money because you need the numbers for that. You need the niche numbers for that. But if you're, you know, why are you podcasting? Is it because you're doing it for a hobby? You want to grow a community? Are you using it to promote a different business venue? Is the podcast the business? Like we've seen a lot of that kind of crop up. We're in podcast, you know, 2.0 version of that where people are starting the show and that is the thing that they want to monetize rather than it supporting the thing that they want to monetize. So I work a lot with that as well too. It was like, well, what do you want? What's the expected outcome of this podcast? Are you looking to get, are you looking to drive people towards a product of your own? You know, that kind of thing. Everybody here is probably going to groan or maybe clap when I say cereal, right? So like that hit last fall and now I get phone calls. Can you help me make a podcast like cereal? I'm like, that's great. Like, are you a writer? Are you in news journalism? No, I run a gym, like, you know, an exercise right. gym. I'm like, well, yeah, I can't really help you do something to get you cereal type numbers when you're not that kind of business and you can't produce that kind of content. What do you want to do? I want those numbers. Well, you know, like you got to kind of work backwards. You want 1.5 million listeners for what? So if you can't really design a show and figure out what you want to get out of it and what you want to help grow a community for, I think that's another thing. Like Paul said, take a step back. I think you need to take a step back there as well, too.
So, Lynette, are you saying that if you don't know what you want, you're probably not going to get it?
Yes.
Boy, podcasting has changed the rules on everything, hasn't it? You know,
you're
I used to get calls
Alec.
From people saying, hey, Paul, and this is back when high-definition video studios didn't come on our phones. I used to get a call, hey, Paul, I just bought a $10,000 high-definition video studio. What should I podcast about? You know, wrong order, okay? You know, it's like fire, aim, ready. We got to stop that. What do you want to do? You know, I want 1 million downloads. And the thing I always say, if you did a podcast and the only person who listened to it was Obama, would you still do it? Well, of course you would. Okay, what do you want? You want influence. You want impact. You know, you want the audience. So figure out what it is that you want, then build, you know, the plan around doing it, and you'll do quite well. It's the, you know, or my favorite one is, hey, I'm doing a foreign language podcast where I teach people how to speak Spanish for free, and for some reason I can't get the people who charge to teach Spanish to sponsor my show. What should I do? Love, Jane.
Love, Jane. Hi, Jane.
Are you in my inbox?
Sorry, Jane. Yes. It's the standard thing. Cliff's heard it before. Lynette's heard it before. It's the same thing over and over. We could probably just write like the 20 email templates that we get over and over again and just send them to ourselves. But yeah.
So I'd like to talk about...
I always want to say bless their heart though, right, Cliff?
Yeah, absolutely. So here's the deal. You talk about the people who come and say, listen, I want those numbers. I want the serial numbers. I want the 1 million downloads. I want to get to 1 million down or 100,000 downloads a month. And I try to tell people, it's like, listen, first of all, very few people ever hit those numbers. I mean, look at Twit. I happen to know Leo and I happen to know the Twit numbers. Even the most successful show on this network, This Week in Tech.
Marketing Mavericks.
You know,
it's
reaching hundreds of thousands of people, and it's one of the most popular shows out there in the tech space or in the business space. And so, I mean, if it took him that long and the advantages that he had going into this, the average podcaster is going to be very blessed to have an audience of somewhere between 2,000 to 10,000 subscribers. And by the way, that is a huge audience, and you can have massive influence. In fact, I very rarely ever talk about numbers of subscribers for my particular podcasts that I produce. However, on Podcast Answer Man, this is the first time ever I'm actually sharing this. But there are literally millions of people around the world who know my name and associate it with podcasting. And in fact, I was talking with you earlier, Tanya, and said that there are 1.5 million people in this world that when they hear the term podcasting, they think my name. And that's the result of four of my subscribers, which happens to be Michael Hyatt, Michael Stelzner from Social Media Examiner, Dan Miller, and my friend Ray Edwards. And if you combine their influence my relationship with those four guys, those guys are always talking about me in their show. They're always talking about me in their public speaking talks. They're always talking about me in their blogs and in one-on-one conversations. So there's over 1.5 million people, when they think about podcasting, they think about me, my brand, and Podcast Answer Man. That's only four of my subscribers. And what I can tell you is that I've built a business today that makes more than $500,000 a year in revenue. It's just myself. And I have less than 10,000 subscribers to Podcast Answer Man.
That is amazing. I just stop right there with what I was going to say. And I'm like, that's pretty awesome.
That's the cool thing about podcasting. And the fact of the matter is I know Cliff well enough to put some words into his mouth. And I bet you Cliff would keep doing the show if the only four people who listened were Mike, Ray, and...
Dan.
Thank you, Dan. You know, it's about that impact. You know, if you did a podcast that got you $1 million consulting contract, who cares if you don't have any other listeners? People forget that.
So I want to say that, you know, you've talked about Leo and This Week in Tech, and I think you're right that, he, you know, Leo pioneered the space. He's been, you know, taken from traditional television to podcasting. So to compare yourself to that would be almost defeating yourself to get started. I think, you know, Lynette, I think, you know, you guys have talked about identify who your audience is and who your peers are, because that's who is going to help you get the word out. And that's what you're saying, Cliff, is that your peers are helping spread the word about, and you've earned their trust. It's also a trust network, right?
Absolutely. And so I just shared some very big numbers. I shared some revenue, and to this day, I've not paid a single penny in advertising.
Well, there you go. All you marketing people.
It's called earned advertising. Though.
It is earned advertising.
Nobody's earned it like Cliff. Yeah. So, you know, it's a legitimate model. We've been doing it for a long time. Podcasting is grabbing the stuff that makes sense.
Well, and I would say that even if you look at the Twit networks, they don't pay for advertising. It's the advertisers come to Twit and they want to stay because of the fact that they do get such a broad audience of dedicated, very concentrated demographic type of you know, enthusiast, tech enthusiast. And I say, if you know, Lynette, you're talking about this reaching to moms. It's all about understanding where the moms go, what they want to hear about. So it starts with creating the content, but then it's about also getting the word out. Now, we're talking about earned credit, but there's also little things that you need to do. And I know that you talk about this. In fact, you're talking at, what's the conference that you're going to, I think, tomorrow?
Oh, this weekend, Geek Girl Camp.
Geek Girl Camp.
Yeah, it's up in Boston or South Boston. I forget their URL. It's geekgirltechcon.com. But yeah, that whole thing, it's like my sixth time being there, is where we help other women with technology, whether we're having hackathons or we're teaching people how to configure their email on their cell phone, or, you know, it ranges from everywhere. So there's that sort of thing. There they are. So I'll be there this weekend teaching, I think, all day. I earned my keep for sure at that place. But we know our audience. The woman that runs that, Leslie, she knows who her audience is, and it's women who may otherwise feel they're asking stupid questions, either to the people at work or to their bosses or whatever. And it's funny, since I talked to you earlier today, I was like, I called Leslie. I was like, you know, we should really have like a workshop at Geek Girl for podcasting. And we were both like, duh, like it's such a popular thing right now. Like, why don't we do that? So when we have it in San Diego, I'm going to do a podcasting workshop for them. But yeah, knowing your target audience, and if you're not a marketer and I don't want a target audience, I want community and fans and stuff like that. And that's okay too. But like you had said before, I think you really have to understand the person or the persona of who you're talking to, and don't worry about getting all squirrely and chasing the shiny object of, well, you know, Cliff has a really popular show that he's built up and he, you know, makes a really good income for it for his family. So I'm going to do what he's doing. So I think that there's a problem with that as well, too, where people chase down what they happen to think is popular versus what they either know or will resonate with an audience. I'll get calls all the time, solicitations to work with people about types of content that they're passionate about and they want to make money from. But it's something like cat herding or goat herding. Like, maybe there's an audience for that. Maybe you're listening to your stuff when you're out herding goats. But it also has to be, I guess what I would say, not commercially viable, but it would have to have a big enough audience on its own. So that's why I think it's really important to define who you're going after. This weekend, Geek Girl, really easy. We're targeting and having workshops for women that want technology help, or young women that are looking to get into coding and technology work. You know, other things that wouldn't work there. Same with podcasts. Some content will work, some content won't. You just kind of have to work around it.
How are podcasters different than traditional media outlets? So, okay, there's already a giggle.
I'm only giggling because I think that, I don't know, Paul definitely would probably be able to answer this because he's been in it probably longer. Yeah, definitely longer than I have. How are podcasters different than traditional media? I would say it's kind of the difference between a journalist and a blogger. So that's kind of how I look at it. When podcasting first came out, it was definitely the Wild West because people were excited, like, you can cuss on a podcast. And I don't really think that's such a great idea. It works for some people, but just because you can doesn't mean you should. And I think that, you know, back in the day, there was definitely this pioneering mindset of podcasters where we were going to change the world. We were going to displace, you know, regular radio, traditional radio, just like bloggers were going to displace, you know, newspapers, which may have actually happened to some degree. But I think that there is definitely a sense of entrepreneurship in the true sense with a podcaster, that they're willing to try things, hopefully, and look to improve on things or look to reach and help other people, where you, and they're willing to do that for themselves. And years ago, when I used to give a lot more talks on podcasting, I used to say that it's an opportunity for you to have your own platform and your own network and your own voice. And when Oprah was still on TV, like, you don't have to wait for Oprah to call you to go sit on her couch to say that you've made it or to get exposure or notoriety. You can make that for yourself. And I think the people that are willing to put themselves out there and they're willing to do the work and they're willing to build the communities, those are the people that gravitate towards the podcasting medium. And the people that want to sit back and wait for somebody to come to them and say, you know, whatever you have to do is good enough for us, and we're going to invite you to come, you know, be on our TV network, be on our radio network, whatever. I don't think that those people, they kind of sit back and wait for that, and they're not really the ones that are drawn to podcasting. So I kind of definitely see podcasters as being more aggressive and more entrepreneurial in spirit.
I'm going to jump in because one of the things on that list of the emails that we all get every week, the email number three is always, how long should my podcast be? Like, there's some magic formula. And this is one of the areas where old media has done a great deal of damage to us. One of the things that podcasters have realized is, if I have 5 minutes of content, I should do a 5-minute show. If I have 30 minutes of content, I should do a 30-minute show. You know, the answer to the question, how long should my podcast be, is as long as it needs to be and not 1 second more. What podcasters have been able to do is we've been able to pioneer media where, if we have a story that takes a long time to tell, we can take a long time to tell it. The days of give me 30 seconds on this or give me 1 minute on this, that's gone. And that's one of the beauties of this. So, you know, you go to iTunes, and there are a couple of shows that are 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, but there's other shows that are 16, 22, 35, 4, 7, 7, 7, 3, 28, because they can be. And that's one of the really powering things. And then what happens is, the flip side of it is the audience adores that. You know, we've all watched the news one night where we go, boy, that was a slow news night. They had to stretch that bad boy out, you know, or something massive happened. And, you know, I'm not going to speak of NBC right now, but you know, insert token newscaster X, you know, tries to fit, you know, a year's worth of content into a 30-minute segment. We're like screaming because we know it's bigger and better than that. And with podcasting, we're able to give them just what we need, you know, just as much as they need. And you know, somebody told me a story, and I can't remember if it was Cliff or not, but it was a television podcaster. I think it was Cliff who had a show really, really popular. And episode three, was it you, Cliff?
Yep.
Oh, good. Go ahead. Tell the story, Cliff. It's so good.
Yeah,
it's
I want to hear the story.
This is the real power. What Cliff is about to show you is the real power of podcasting in a nutshell. Go, Cliff.
Tell me which show, which
he's like, which story?
It was the Bionic Woman story, right?
Oh, yeah. So yeah, basically, okay, I had already had such success with the television show, and my wife and I created a network of shows all about entertainment at the time. So we had done Desperate Housewives, Grey's Anatomy, and with every show we were doing, we were getting audiences, because they were popular already, of audiences sizes of like 25, 50,000 people. And so we figured Bionic Woman's going to come out. This is going to have a great audience. And so we recorded.
How did that go wrong?
It was Yeah. So we created BionicWomanFanPodcast.com, and we recorded episode number one, and we talked about how excited we were. We recorded episode number two. We talked about the pilot episode. And then episode number three was that the title of that podcast episode is "What Is This Crap?" And we used that episode to explain why we will never create another episode of this podcast and why we're shutting it down. Because it was a horrible television show.
And everything else right there. We can do what we want to do. We can do what we need to do. We can take as little or as long time as we need to do it. And that is the power. And I'll tell you, newspaper guys, you know, who have to give 6 inches, who have to give half a page, they're screaming for that. Editors, you know. I once picked my brother up at the airport during the whole Ebola on the airlines, you know, scam. And there was a newscaster there. It was like, God, I just need 30 seconds of somebody telling me they're not scared. Would you please give me the 30 seconds so I can go home? You know, podcasters don't have to deal with that nonsense. And it's a pretty cool place to be.
Tanya, you asked the, you know, how are they different? And I want to go back to something Lynette said. She says podcasters, you know, they're willing to put themselves out there. And that prompted in my mind something that's very unique among podcasters and how they're different, I believe, from traditional media. And I would use probably four words. They're a little bit more authentic with who they are as an individual. They're being more transparent in what they share with their audience. And they're also more accessible. And I actually would say they're more relatable. They're more relatable because they are willing to be a little bit authentic and transparent. Just say, you know, I am who I am. I'm just a normal person, just like you. Whereas I think in traditional media, there's this push for people to be seen as the expert on top, and I'm teaching you rather than somebody who's on the journey with you. And I love one of the things that I love about podcasting is I've been following podcasters since middle of 2005, and I've never listened to a single podcast where I don't have a personal relationship with that particular podcaster. So, and by the way, that goes to Leo Laporte. He was the first podcaster I've ever listened to. And I've actually personally met him, and Leo and I are friends now. They're Adam Curry. I've met Adam Curry. Paul Colligan. I listened to Paul back in the day. I listened to my friend Father Roderick Van Hogen, the third podcaster I ever heard of. He's a Catholic priest in the Netherlands. I've actually stayed in a hotel room with him while at conferences, and I'm going to spend 2 days with him in the Netherlands this summer when our family goes on a European vacation. So I love that podcasters are more authentic, more transparent. As a result of that, they're more relatable, and as a result of that, they're also more accessible to you because their audiences aren't in the hundreds of millions. They actually have thousands of people in their audience, and that means they have more time for you as an individual.
Okay, what came first? Did you follow them first and then you met them? Or were you friends with these people and then you started following their podcast? Because I think I can certainly see following somebody and wanting to get to know them, and I've had that happen myself. But realistically, you're going to find content, right, first, aren't you?
Well, yeah, that's in every scenario. I found them first, became a huge fan, and I started out by maybe leaving a comment on a blog post or on their show notes. Maybe I found their social media channel, and when they post something, I would reply or I would leave a comment on their Facebook. A lot of podcasters open up the ability to provide feedback, and they'll read your feedback in the show. Or in a lot of audio podcasts, we podcasters will have a voicemail feedback hotline. So you can record a voicemail and they'll play it in the show and have a conversation with you kind of one-sided in a way. But all of these little tiny connections, building those relationships over time, all of a sudden it's like, gosh, over the last couple months, we've come to interact with each other more than I do with people I went to school with. And so it slowly builds. And then what happens is you go to a conference where they're also going and you have the opportunity to make that face-to-face connection, and then things can really take off from there.
Okay, speaking of transparency, now I gotta say, Paul's the first one to respond. No, he doesn't really have anything in his image here. So if you're watching the show versus listening to it, it's, you know, it's just Paul, right? But you've got a very clean desk, Cliff. I mean, is your studio and your desk really that immaculate all the time? Come on.
It is, actually. I've never been diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder, but I am obsessive about a clean workspace, and I have a very successful business, and I'm 100% paperless.
100% paperless?
I do not believe in paper.
That's a show you should do, Cliff.
That's paper shaming, if I ever heard it.
I see your Evernote scanner right behind you there. You should do a show, yeah. Cliff.
I should. Although I did do Business Tech Weekly, like 121 episodes where I covered all that.
I was going to say do a course. I would buy it because I had paper everywhere around me off camera.
Yeah.
It's easy to still like the paper. Come on. Hey, I'm doing pretty good. I'm finally using my MacBook. I used to have a much bigger monitor. I take baby steps here. So what is probably one technique or tool that helps a podcaster go outside of their traditional marketing reach, their friends, their network? I mean, certainly there's SEO, there's ways to get past that. What are some of the things that people maybe don't do that they should do, or little tricks that maybe they could implement that are not going to require them to be marketing experts or technology experts?
I can give you a Twitter strategy that I've given to a bunch of people that was very successful for myself. And if I can just give it to you in the example of a Hunger Games podcast that my wife and I did. So it's the Hunger Games fan podcast. And we created a Twitter account called Hunger Games Pod. And one of the things that we did is we spent a little bit of money on the professional artwork that's the background of the Twitter, background of the webpage. We created a very nice piece of artwork for our Twitter profile. And we made sure that the bio on the Twitter ID was very clear that this, if you're a Hunger Games fan, if you're a fan of this book series or the movies, then you're probably going to be interested in this audio podcast where we review that series chapter by chapter and movie by movie. And so basically all we need to do is we've already created the content, or we were creating the content. All we needed to do is provide valuable content that if all of a sudden these fans of the show or the movies found that there was audio content provided on a regular basis that they would be interested in to take their enjoyment of the Hunger Games to the next level, all they need to do is find out about it. And so what I did is I used Twitter as a way to let those people know that it existed. And here's a Twitter strategy that I used. It's a tool called TweetAdder at tweetadder.com. And this software will allow you to find certain accounts that are online that already have Twitter fan or Hunger Games fans on them. And then what happens is you can personally go and have it automatically, or actually now you have to press the button for each one, but you can go in and follow hundreds of people at a time on Twitter that are definitely Hunger Games fans. And majority of those people still have the email notification sent to them. It's a default thing from Twitter. Every time somebody follows you, you get an email saying, hey, @HungerGamesPod just followed you. It's got our artwork. It's got our profile information. And then what happened was about 500 people a day who had never heard of podcasting, all of a sudden we know that they're Hunger Games fans because they're following Lionsgate Twitter account, the author of the book's Twitter account. And we just hit up and followed every single one of those people, 500 people at a day. And as a result of that, we were gaining about 300 to 400 new Twitter followers and also subscribers to that podcast.
That's a pretty great tool, but not everybody's on Twitter. So, you know, what about gaining those people that aren't? Go ahead, Paul.
I got one for you. Okay. So hey, Lynette, New York Times bestselling author says, I want to get in the podcasting space. And I go, okay. But here's what we're going to do. We're not going to talk about the podcast at all. And, you know, and she's like, why in the world would we do that? You know, because very few people in the grand scheme of things care about the fact that you have a podcast more so than care about you. The whole message is not going to be, I have a podcast. The whole message is going to be, I want to communicate with you every week. That's it. And so an email went out that said to her mailing list that said, now, yes, New York Times bestselling author. We don't all have mailing lists. But the newsletter went out and said, hey, every week, I want to update you on topic X. And here's how you do it. Go into iTunes, click subscribe. That was the message. This person made it to number 4 in all of iTunes as a result of this campaign. And this particular person, every time releases a new episode, gets about 30, I checked the stats right before we went live with this, gets about 37,000 downloads in the first 72 hours after the release of a podcast because that many people came in and clicked the subscribe button. And the thing was, if this person got out and said, I've got a podcast, nobody would have cared, or not as many would have cared. But this person said, hey, I want to keep up to date with you every week. I want to send stuff directly to your phone. Here's how we're going to do it. That changed the game. this person now doesn't market their podcast at all, doesn't even mention it on the blog, doesn't do the social media thing, just has this massive subscriber base. And every time they release an episode, you know, 30 to 40,000 downloads per week, let alone the fall off of the, oh, after that. Nearly 2 million downloads since launch, doing great. So what you do, you know, the big lesson from this is don't market the podcast, market the content. Don't market the steak, market the sizzle. You know, Cliff and I were at an event a couple of years ago, and there was this gal, we were sitting on the boat, and there was this gal who was like, what's the big deal with podcasting? Cliff grabbed her phone, and Cliff said, click, 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 click. Now, look at this. You can now consume whatever content you want whenever you want. And this woman looked at Cliff like he was the second coming. It was like, oh, my goodness, thank you for empowering me. This is what podcasters can do. You know, I was a fan of Leo before Twit. I was a fan of Leo, you know, the old screensaver days. The message wasn't Leo has a podcast. The message is I can get Leo again via podcast. And that's how we change the message. It's got to stop being the podcasting echelon. We're done. The people who care that's a podcast, it's over. That market's been met. Mm-hmm. But the world who wants content when and where and how they want, this is different. I was driving like 5 or 6 years ago. I was in my car with my daughter. She's 7 years old at the time. And I'm pulling out and I go, oh, hey, I forgot the iPod. And she goes, what are we going to do? You know, she's so nervous. I go, oh, don't worry, we're going to do radio. And she goes, what's radio? You know, I mean, that's the kid's day. Now, here's the funny part. I told her, I said, you know, I'm trying to think, how do you explain radio to somebody who doesn't know what radio is? So I go, well, radio is like an iPod where somebody else chooses what music you listen to. And she looks at me, she goes, well, why would we want to do that? That is podcasting right there. You know, and the second we move out of that, the whole, she loved control. The device represented control. And podcasting represents control. That is our future, not top 10 list at iTunes, not new and notable, not any of the stuff that some of the hotshot gurus will tell you. Podcasting is meeting with your audience and letting them know that your content is available at the time and the place and the device of their choosing.
Mm-hmm. Hear, hear.
Or not.
I have to say with that, though, also, it's knowing what you're producing and yeah. Who you intend it for, and to reach out and to go to those audiences. While there are, just by default of you being in iTunes and properly describing your shows and episodes, you know, you will attract some people by default. There's no doubt about that. But to get further than that, it is, you know, the whole internet is very noisy every year. I'm sure every day it probably doubles in size, but you have to reach out to those people. I've done this with every social network that I've ever worked with, is you can't just put something out there and expect people to search and find you. They're not looking for you. People don't care that you have something. When you go and approach them and show your interest in them, that's where people begin to have interest back in you via your content, however you're producing it, audio, video, text, however. So it, you know, it takes a lot of grunt work. It takes a lot of legwork to go out there and to search the internet, to find the groups, the bulletin boards, the Facebook groups, the Twitter hashtags, the whatever you're looking for, the blogs, to be able to go out there and find the communities of people that you're interested in. I mean, there are definitely ways to seed that and to go and find them more automatically, like Cliff had said. But I mean, if you're not familiar with Twitter, it's going to be really difficult to learn how to podcast and do everything with that and learn Twitter on top of it. Yeah. So I say just take the networks where you're most comfortable with online and go out and search for those people. And it's like the old-fashioned type things. Go stir up conversations with them. Don't link dump and spam your stuff. Yeah. And just say, here's my show, here's my show. Have a genuine conversation with them. Offer them genuine help. Participate in their conversations. Share their information. Become known in their circles and to these people that you are someone of quality that is willing to help them and expand what they know. And I won't say by default, because it's not like a one-for-one thing, but you know, naturally they will become interested in what you have to do and what you have to say and the content that you have to provide. And in this case, the content just happens to be packaged in the media of podcasting.
Lynette, would you say have something worth downloading?
Well, yeah, I mean, of course.
You know, listen, I get tweets all the time. Listen to my podcast. I get tweets. I know you guys too. Paul, listen to my podcast. Well, why? What's about? Oh, you'll love it.
Why?
What's it about? You know, the message is not the media. You know, the message comes by media. And this whole idea that I got a podcast, listen to me. Believe it or not, don't tell Leo this, But I actually got a couple people listening to his show, not because they knew what a podcast was, but because they remembered Tech TV. And I introduced them to podcasting as a result of Leo. You know, and this is the thing that we forget. You know, yes, Lynette, if your audience is on social media, go to social media. But if your audience isn't on social media, if your audience is on a stage, if your audience is the 8 people at the Chamber of Commerce, say, hey, if anybody wants to know how to get more afterwards, hand me your phone or I'll walk you through the process. Don't talk about a podcast. You know, we talk about the paperless society. You know, nobody ever talks about PostScript anymore, but PostScript is the language that we talk to our printers. You know, no, we just care that we have a printed piece of paper. Podcasting is the exact same way.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to share.
Go for it, Cliff.
I was just going to say, I'd love to share the number one way that I pick up new subscribers to my podcast. And it's actually what I'm doing right now. There's no question in my mind. Yeah, when just being on another podcast. Yeah. Because here's the deal. I mean, I love it. By the way, I pick up at least one new subscriber every flight that I'm on because I always sit next to somebody new that I've never met before. And either before we take off or after we land, I actually show them how to subscribe to my podcast.
You do it well, man. I've seen you in action. It's amazing. It's inspirational.
So, but the thing is I'm always educating a majority of the people out there. 2/3 of the people, Webster's research or Edison research, Tom Webster's
I know. Tongue-tied.
Content will tell you that 2/3 of the people have no idea what a podcast is.
Yeah. Right.
And so the cool thing about being a guest on somebody else's podcast, especially if their target audience is similar to your target audience, it doesn't have to be in the same niche. But the reality is that when I'm actually being interviewed on a podcast, 100% of those subscribers already know all about podcasting. All I have to do is be interesting and have a compelling story about why you might want to hear more from me after this 1 hour on this particular show that I happen to be on.
And I think what you said earlier, and certainly what I know to be true about you, Cliff, is it's something you're passionate about. And I think that is igniting for people who are listening, who are following you. They want to be a part of that passion. If they're interested in the topic, they're hooked. And but would you say that you actually have to invite them to follow your podcast, or do they just follow you because they like what you have to say? I mean, how important is asking for the sale?
I think it's very important. You want to let people know what is available and how they can consume the content that you're creating. I love the message that Paul has shared several times. It's not about telling people that you have a podcast. It is saying, I want to communicate with you continually, and here's what I want to communicate to them. So you let them know, but you got to let them know how. And, yeah. One of my favorite questions at the end of most interviews on a podcast. So, Cliff, how can people stay in touch with you? Well,
oh, great number setup, one way.
I know.
Great setup. It's
exactly like that.
Yeah.
You got to tell people how they can continue to follow you beyond that.
Well, and it's exactly where we're going with this next question. And that is, how can people keep in touch with you? And Cliff, I'll just go with you first. How can people follow you? How can they continue to learn from you? What's the best way they can stay connected?
Sure. Well, I'm going to say something unique first. And I would say for anybody who is watching this and you're not a podcaster yet, the first place I want to send you is learnhowtopodcast.com. And that is a free tutorial. I don't even require your email address or anything. It's completely free. Literally tens of thousands of people have used that to launch their podcast without ever having to pay me a penny. And I encourage you to check that out and start your own podcast. And then if you have come to, feel a little bit of a connection and want to learn more about me, start there. That's actually going to be on my website. And I encourage you to check out my podcast at podcastanswerman.com.
There you go. And Lynette, if somebody wants to follow you and they want to stay in touch with you, how can they do that?
Well, two ways, actually. I'll at Lynette Radio, and it's my Twitter and pretty much everything. And it's funny, I picked that Twitter handle years ago because no one knew what podcasting was. So it's like, it's radio on the internet. They're like, oh, okay, I get that, right? So the Lynette Radio name kind of stuck. But the new thing that actually you can come if you're interested is thefiercenetwork.com. And that is kind of getting built behind the scenes. But I figured I've paid enough time, building other people's media properties. It's time for me to do it for myself. So that is a podcast network that is up and coming, and it is targeted towards Generation X women. You don't have to be a mom. You can identify as a woman. Doesn't really matter. We're kind of going with what it takes to be a fierce woman today. And all aspects of that. So it's lifestyle, health, travel, that. And what we'll launch with one show And hopefully by this time or early January 2016, we will have a total of 12 shows on our network. So we're going to phase them in one at a time.
Congratulations. That's big news. Thank you. And Paul.
My goal in life is to have a podcast on the Fierce Women Podcast Network. If I pull that off, I will be able
done.
To be the one.
It's done. You there don't even go. Have to wear a dress.
Twitter, hey. Twitter at Colligan would be where to grab me. Looks like it's on the screen right there. Very cool. I do have a show called The Podcast Report. Boy, in the world of SEO, did I learn what a bad idea that was. So when you search for The Podcast Report, make sure you search for The Podcast Report at thepodcastreport.com. That'll take you there. I do have a book called How to Podcast 2015, and it's available wherever fine books are sold right now as of today. And I'll keep this going until the show at least goes on the feed. It's $2.99 at Amazon for the Kindle version of that. So that's How to Podcast 2015.
There you go. I want to thank all three of you. We could continue talking about this. I didn't even get to half of the topics I think that we had to cover, which is
let's
like
do it. Part two next week. You available?
Yeah, that sounds great. We'll just we'll just take over the whole Twit network. No.
There we go.
I don't think fans
Stranger
would like
things
that.
Things have happened.
And hopefully you guys will tune in to the new show that we're launching this weekend, the new Screensavers. So
you know I am.
I'm definitely in.
It's so retro. It's hipster now. I love
it's hipster.
It.
Thanks, you guys, and until next time, I really appreciate your feedback. And that is another episode of Marketing Mavericks. You can follow me. Yep, that's true. You can follow me at Tanya Hall Radio. I still use radio, so I'm cool like Lynette. I just want to be like Lynette. That's it. But you can follow me, and I want to hear back from you. I want to hear your feedback. You can follow me on Twitter. There's my Twitter profile at Tanya Hall Radio, and I'm probably going to keep that. I have a couple of other Twitter pages too, but that's the one I use most often, and I try to answer people's questions. So if you ask me something, I'll try to connect with you, and I reach out to people. I'm very social. You can also find me on Facebook. I'm Tanya Hall on Facebook, or Barzini, and I'm going to be adding more personal information on there about how to follow me and keep up with what I'm doing. And for the standpoint of our show, this is going to go a little bit on hiatus, where I've got a couple of trips planned. I'm actually going to Russia next week, so pretty soon. And so the show is actually going to go on a little bit of a hiatus, but you can continue to stay in touch with me. You can contact me through any of the social outlets. I'm happy to stay connected with you until we come back. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I want to thank our technical director again, Anthony Nielsen. I'm looking for those kitty pictures. Do you have those yet?
Oh, yeah, there we go.
So prepared. Are these the kittens you have at home now?
Yeah. Hold on, let me just pull up. Here's a video.
Oh, is them? This is actually them?
Yeah. There's
one. Oh, how do I get one?
You want one?
I totally want.
You can have that one. She's very sweet.
Hey, do they have names? What's her name?
I haven't really named them yet.
Okay.
Wanted to see what their personality
was. Is this another one?
Yeah. Aww. But yeah, you should totally take one home with you.
Oh, you're just killing me here. Well, I should probably not do that before I leave to go on leave the country
and
abandon it.
Yeah.
But I do want to thank you, Anthony, for all your great work on the show. And I want to thank our audience because, yes, I do read your emails. I do listen to your posts. And hopefully I get back to you on all of them. And you've given some great feedback. And hopefully this show was one that you can put into your iTunes or whatever that you can go back to listen to our great guests and the information they provide. Again, everybody, stay in touch with me. I want to thank you for tuning in. And until next time, have a good one.